I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Okay. I've crossed valleys.
So, shout.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good. So, okay. After our usual 10 minutes of banter.
And small appliance.
And small appliance rescue.
Yes.
Welcome to Barnstorming PA. This is Jordy. I'm joined by regular co-host
Sam Pearson here.
Excellent. Glad to have you. And first timer, but we've long desired you. Wait a minute.
Sought after.
You might be the very first person that's ever said it to me. I'll take it for what it is. Bill Hanos is my name.
Great. So tonight we're drinking some pretty delicious beer that Bill brought. What's the name of this? We're always trying to get sponsors.
It's a single cut. IPA if they're out of Brooklyn.
And we'll give some free. What's this store? What's the name of the store over near Northumberland?
Oh, yeah. W&S Beer Distributors.
So you head south on, is that 147?
Yes, it is.
And it's on your left. It's by an appliance store. That's how I was.
Yeah, north of Norrie.
All right. Cool. So maybe once he sees that we have dozens of listeners, he'll be excited to.
Yeah, you tell him you get a 10% discount. Mention.
All right. So this is. I'm really super happy to have Sam and Bill here. I think doing the podcast for me is often just a great chance to have some interesting conversation and not feel like we have to do too much research. we can kind of talk from the heart.
Notes.
So canvassing and voter turnout are on our minds. So we wanted to start with just sort of quick canvass stories, interesting, funny. I just watched The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly for the first time, so not that we have to follow that. An interesting movie, you know. Have you ever seen it?
Amazing
movie. I didn't realize what an anti-war movie it is.
Yeah.
And also kind of an anti-capitalism or critique, you know. Anyway, well, we should start a movie review podcast sometime.
Yeah.
So here's a story. I'll start off. I was canvassing with my son Elijah for the first time, which was great fun. And we had a list of persuadables, right? So we went up, and it was a 71-year-old woman in a small borough in this area. And we knocked on the door, and I said, what I use is a little bit of a, you know, I'm here volunteering with this group, and I'm hoping to talk to you about, you know, what affects people's lives. If you had a politician here, like right now, like Governor Wolf, who's running, what would you want to ask him? She goes, build the wall. And I was like, oh boy. And it was downhill from there. She was a total Trump supporter.
Yeah.
So then we looked at our list, and the next door was the other half of her duplex, and it was same last name, 1 year older. And we were like, it was that moment you're like, I don't need to be deal with a Trump person again. And I was about to chicken out, and then I looked, and they had one of the no matter where you're from, you're welcome here signs.
<That's> awesome.
We were like, sadly she wasn't home, or be an even better story. But we were just picturing, you know, this duplex with the Trump supporter and the Bernie supporters, sisters in their 70s, 1 year apart. So that was our
get them out on the front stoops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. NPR, are you listening?
Yeah. So you've got one of you have a story you want to share?
Oh, just I actually really enjoy canvassing around here, and I've done it for lots of elections. And in fact, it's one of the ways that I actually learn about towns around here. Like, I'm interested in towns. I'm interested in how they're built, you know, from a planning and architectural standpoint. So I have canvassed in Watsontown and Milton and Sealands Grove and Shamokin and now in Northumberland. And so
hold a sec. That's our next uncut being opened.
And so this time Northumberland, and we met a very enthusiastic 88-year-old. We were like, are you Domenica? And she's like, oh, I hate that name. It
are
means
you what?
Sunday. Her name is Domenica.
Oh.
But she's, call me R. Marie. Am I allowed to say that? Should I? Or is that not?
No, it's not a HIPAA violation.
Yeah.
Whatever version.
Anyway, she was, you know. Oh, that's good. She was just, you know, what are we doing? What are we here for? And very enthusiastic to talk to. She's like, and we were like, do you have a plan for getting to the polls? She's like, And she has her, she has like two walkers. She's like, I don't need this one. You want it? And we're like, I'll be okay.
That's awesome. For voters or for your elderly grandmother?
Yeah, for us walking down the street. Do you want it? And we're like, no, we'll be okay. And so we're talking about her plan. She's like, oh yeah, Lisa's gonna take me to the polls. Lisa's a big Trump supporter. That's my grandson calls him Trump. You know, and so she's like, "Oh no, but I know who I'm voting for."
She did a little hand gesture.
Yes. Yeah. So this is
an auditory medium, Sam.
Sorry, I'm bad. Yeah, no, she had a whole sort
I love
of
that.
Little hand gesture, whispering, yeah. And she was into it.
Did she say anything whether she'd been canvassed before?
No,
this cycle?
It wasn't clear that she had. We definitely did see other people who were like, oh yeah, other people were bi. Mm. So I'm a little nervous about that. I don't want to overdo it.
Supposedly, I have not actually seen the research, but people who follow this, you know, the Analyst Institute, it's this like group that do like high quality social science research about all of these things, and like PA Together and their partners like are relying on some of that. But what I've been told, and I haven't seen it, but is that there's no measurable effect on like suppressing turnout, because people say, I mean, they'll say it, you know, and there was a thing I saw on Facebook, somebody was like, oh my God, somebody said you're waking my child, and if one more person wakes my child, I'm not going to vote. And so when you hear that as a canvasser, it's hard to weigh that visceral experience versus some pointy head like me being like, well, you know, research shows, but
there was a sign on a door that said shh.
Yeah, oh.
But I could see the feet in the living room, and I tapped really lightly, and he came to the door, and he was all into it. He was like, baby, and you know, and I was like, sure. You know, so he appreciated that I followed the sign, but we still had the contact.
Great.
And, you know, got, you know, yeah, he'll probably vote before work, and his wife will vote in the afternoon, and like, awesome. You know where your polling place is.
What's your story, Bill?
So, last weekend, I didn't do it this weekend. I went, Sherry Jacobson and I, we covered about 71 addresses in Sunbury. It took us about 4 hours.
Sunbury.
Yeah, which was great. And you know, you're absolutely, you don't really know a place until you walk around it. You really have to get out.
Can you kind of paint a picture of Sunbury for people who don't know the area?
Sunbury is
It's a city.
It once was probably more of a city than it is now, and certainly
in terms of population, or
probably both, and prosperity and everything.
Oh, prosperity, no doubt.
But it's interesting. And
a lot of row houses.
A lot of row houses.
Do you remember that video?
A lot of weird, like, small streets with small houses in them, kind of backing up to broader streets with big houses.
There's very strange layout, like you clearly, like broken teeth, like missing teeth in streets, and then they get replaced, and then the street address.
You don't actually mean teeth.
It's called, missing teeth is when you have like a row of houses, like row houses, and they're supposed to be continuous, and then you have gaps.
Oh.
And then you can wind
up. Those were probably condemned or something at some point.
It may have been, and so the weird thing is you wind up in Northumberland as well with a street address that's on the big street, but it's a house.
I wasn't going to comment on the dentition of
Sorry.
Weekend.
Sorry. Yeah.
Could you make a little tooth mold of this?
That was a term of art.
Okay. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. But it is. It's kind of the layout. I've never.
I always feel claustrophobic in Sunbury.
Broad streets and then these little tiny. But you think it was in an alley? No, wait. That's a Pennsylvania street.
Yeah.
And it's just little narrow, barely two car widths wide. Street, and their houses all along there, and they're smaller and simpler than the houses that front
the main
on the main streets.
And was it any Democrats, do you know? Or?
Yeah, there was a surprise.
Because if you're going 2 weeks ago, it was probably more trying to persuade.
Well, I would say there were, and people were very adamant. They were very enthusiastic about going out to vote, the people that we talked. We got one door closed in our face, but that was it. I mean, of all the houses we went to, that was early on, we thought, oh boy, this is going to be trouble. But otherwise, and there were a lot of people that weren't at home, but most people were like, yeah, I'm getting out there.
Did you have a little, you have a little nugget of a story or a fun interaction?
So we did. I'll tell you the story, and then I'll tell you the one thing that really...
No, you'll tell me the story now.
I will, indeed. Absolutely. So this guy was he answered the door, and it wasn't his address. It was, I guess his girlfriend was the person at the house, but he was there, and he was, I live down the street, but she's going to vote, don't worry about it. And this guy was like from, He was a, he, I think he was like Puerto Rican from like Long Island or one of the Queens or something like that. He was like, yeah, I used to drive a cab in New York and I, you know, I came here, I've been here for about 10 years, and, he was just talking about all the local politicians he knew. And he's like, I remember Trump, that SOB, I was in my cab once and he had a couple of women back there. And the things that you could tell he was doing blow in the back of my cab, and he was saying all this crap.
I would totally believe it.
Yeah, totally, right? Like in, like in a studio set in 54 days.
Yeah,
right.
You know, set,
right.
You know, like the late 70s. So he was an interesting, he was, and he went on, like, I mean, like Sherry and I kind of had to be like, okay, well, you know.
Yeah.
Eventually we
had. I've had that experience. Of like, I would love to talk to you often.
I could stay there for 2 hours and talk to
you. Because you are fascinating.
So he was probably the most colorful and interesting person we saw. But people were pretty adamant about voting. There weren't a lot of like, oh God, no, what are you doing here? Sometimes you get that, but.
Well, before we started recording, oh, you had another thing you wanted to say.
No, but the one thing that really that kind of amazed me is that nobody, I mean, literally, like, I mean, Sherry will attest to this, nobody had a clue who Mark Friedenberg was. No one knew who Mark Friedenberg was. They did not, they just were like, oh, yeah, well, oh, I don't like Marino, but it was more like they were like, and you know, Sherry, yeah. you know, knows a lot more about Mark than I do, but still, you know, you're like, no, this guy's really smart. Marino. And
so unqualified and corrupt, he got rejected by the Trump administration twice.
Right.
He didn't even get on the show to get fired.
That's bad. Right.
That is bad.
Right.
He didn't even make the audition tapes for the Trump administration.
I mean, that is, yeah.
Right. He was too dirty.
That's right. Yeah.
And
wow.
Probably not smart enough, which is just as bad as it gets.
Yeah, he may be reasonably. I mean, he did get through law school. I don't know. I guess Michael Cohen did too. But
well, I, you know, just in terms of qualification, like Friedberg, like the guy's. I mean, it would be really kind of a good thing to have a cybersecurity expert in.
It would be great
in
if Mark wins.
In the federal government. I mean, just that alone, just take all the politics out of it.
I haven't seen any polling on it. I don't know.
I don't know. Silver has got it.
Silver? Oh,
Nate
Silver.
Silver.
Yeah, but based, but aren't, but yeah. Have there even been any polls in the field? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. You're right. And you know, when he was at that fundraiser, I don't know if you guys were at that fundraiser in August.
The Pig Roast? Or the Jacobson's?
Jacobson's.
I was there.
Yeah, you were there, of course. And he, you know, he basically said the Democrat, that the party itself was not
supporting him.
Supporting him in any financial way.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, it's hard because here, what you're looking for is wave support, right? And being kicked over by the wave. But we're in a place where we're doing our best, but.
We're in a trough.
Yeah.
We're
in a trough.
But the whole, so high tide lifts all boats. The wave will still lift the trough.
Yeah, true.
But
right, you're right. Right.
But
I just want to indulge a sort of mild tangent for me, but that thing usually about economics that the rising tide lifts all boats, and I was always like thinking about boats as a metaphor for people in their households, like, but not if the boats are chained to the bottom,
right?
that's my addition to that. That's good.
Yeah.
You like that? That's good. Kind of segueing into the state of the election, and I mean, before we start recording, Bill, you asked me like how I think things are going, and I'll just say like this cycle started starting after Trump won. I've been so involved in organizing local politics. I consume so much less news and so much less polling. Like in other cycles, I would have been really up on it. I don't know. Like I was looking at something for the first time the other day, and they're going through Pennsylvania races. I was like, I don't know the 5th, I don't know the 6th, I don't know the 8th. Like I know what's going on in this race and in Denny Wolf's race, and which is near us. But anyway, so I don't feel like I have a great, like I like the question, and I've just gotten lots of mixed signals. Like some people have had really good experiences canvassing, some people have had really negative. Friend of ours went out canvassing last week and talked to 8 people, and 8 of them said they weren't going to vote. Like people who agreed with us on policy, but like, nah, I don't want to vote.
And which canvassing was that?
I'm trying to be discreet. It was issue based canvassing.
Sure.
I guess I'll say I'm mildly hopeful for the whole country, but I'm not very hopeful for the down ticket people around here.
Well, right, and that's what I was saying about the trough. I mean, basically, we we're in a really red area. Not like we're in a red area even without the top of the current situation, right? So it's a heavy lift, and unfortunately, the right is mobilized, like for all the wrong reasons. But they're getting prodded and poked, and it's doing something for them. So that's a challenge.
But so
I ran into someone who said not voting, and the best spin I could put on it was maybe they realized if they said that we wouldn't come back, and yeah. they just want to be left alone. Yeah. But I was also that wasn't the vibe I got.
Yeah,
they were serious. We got a couple of that, but or they're I'm voting for Trump and I don't want to tell you, or I'm voting
no. I got one. I got one that I was just like.
I've seen some Trump signs in Northumberland actually on the one the way to Northumberland I think, and because I was coming back from church and I was like, wow. I mean, I guess you know you just love them so much you want them to run again or.
Oh yeah, there are a lot of people who are still in. Totally in.
Yeah.
How about a third of the country? How about 40%?
The same people who were in the first time around.
Of the electorate.
Yes, of the electorate. Exactly.
Well, that's
big difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, while we're on this, I mean, what do you all think about non-voters? Like, I know some people. Well, I'll just ask you guys what you think. Like you know, when you, like do you get are you frustrated with them? Are you angry? Are you like you should do your duty? If you don't get to vote, you don't get to complain.
Well, it was kind of interesting to me this time that you know there's different scripts every time you canvass, and we were specifically asking people why they were going to vote,
mm-hmm.
and there were a few people who said healthcare or, mm-hmm. but in general, people were like. It is a right, and it is a cherished right.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that.
Yeah,
I'm like, you know, and so that was a shock when the person said, I'm not voting. Because it was like, I really, you know, the presence of that cherished right feels very strong right now. I think, you know.
That's all we have.
Well, and it's slipping away.
Yeah, and you know, we as white upper class folks do... just trust me on the income distribution. you know, what is it? Something like 300,000 African Americans in Georgia were purged in like one weekend or some crazy big number. We all looked a little bit at this piece. I mean, I've been sort of mildly hopeful, but kind of worried, honestly, just because of canvassing sort of stories. And then today, I saw. go away. We have guests trying to break into the studio. No, I showed the microphone and she looks embarrassed. Susan would be great. We'll get her in here. Yeah, we should. We should. Anyway, so I saw this thing that caught my eye. So this is an NPR article. We'll put it in our show notes. They were talking to some expert named McDonald on professor at the University of Florida who maintains a turnout database, and he thinks that there'll be really high record turnout, and it's based on four factors. So I thought I would just name them, and then maybe we can talk about them. One is record special election turnout. So those is like leading indicators.
Connor Lambs,
the guy in Alabama. I've already forgotten his name. Ran against Moore.
Doug Jones.
I keep thinking, isn't Duncan Jones a really awful congressman from California? I think.
Duncan Hunter.
Yeah.
And he is awful, yes.
Yeah, really awful. High primary turnout, a high degree of self-reported interest in the election, and high levels of early voting. In some states, McDonald said he is seeing early voting that is exceedingly high. In Georgia, for example, compared to this time in 2014, early voter turnout is three times higher so far. And of course, you want to compare 2014 to 2018 because that's better than a presidential year.
Can I stop just for a second? And I read this article,
mm-hmm.
and I realized I'm not. I don't quite know exactly what an eligible voter is at this point in time.
An eligible voter.
Does it mean a registered voter? And it just means anybody who's 18 years or older, citizen, blah, blah, not a felon in Florida, et cetera, et cetera. Is that what eligible voter means? Because because, you know, voter registration is done, right? And it did.
And not everywhere.
Not everywhere.
Some people have, some states have election day registration.
Right, okay.
But Minnesota, where I voted for the first time when I was 18.
Is that a huge number? Or is
it's a handful. I mean, there's maybe seven states. I can't remember. Okay. I don't know the list off the top of my head.
It tends to be the Midwest and the Mountain West where the progressives were in charge.
Okay, so you can't, I was going to, because when I read those four indicators, I thought, we know.
It's a done deal.
Not only that, but our registration number's up. I mean, is that another thing that he could look at and say, well, voter registration is way up, higher than it had been? Is anybody?
Well, people are looking at that. And in fact, I've definitely seen, like, Kentucky, they have record numbers of voters registered. Now, you have to remember that if you don't have voter purging going on, which is actually, there are normal voter purges, like, are reasonable, people move, people die, you know? And so, right now, on the boards, I think in Kentucky, they have like, I can't remember, is it 49 million to 41 million or something like that? Like a
voters in Kentucky?
I don't know what the
number. Can't be that.
So it must be 4.9 to 4.1.
That sounds more like it.
that big of a jump.
That big of a, no, like a difference between registered Dems and registered Rs. However, you don't know, Dems are also more likely to move.
And they're more likely to be students.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you can have a large number on the rolls.
I get really frustrated when people talk about registration numbers for those reasons, and I also feel like in a really deep way it feeds into this thing that I think has been let me take a step back. It's clear to me that the Republicans have a strategy of trying to suppress voter turnout, and whereas, you know,
to discredit eligible voters, like to disparage and discourage and actually also undermine legitimacy even of people who are legitimate voters.
Right. And one of the tools,
that's a big problem.
Yeah, and I think one of the...
just going back to my question was like, who is going to show up to a polling place, the right polling place, cast a ballot, and nobody's going to say, you can't vote here. Right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was trying to get at without...
Do people... Oh, you're saying who... Do we know which people will show up?
Yeah, do we have any kind of confidence in that, what that number is, and whether that's going on? That's all. Make your point.
It's a great point. I want to cycle back to that, in these voter...
Because I recognize all those other issues that are...
Yeah.
You know...
Right. So people often, like, they want to know what's the possibility, what's this district look like? And so they'll look at registration numbers with the idea that the registration number is a really good measure of those... either possible voters, we're not even talking about likely, but possible voters. And what I'm trying to say is that, like, one of the tools that the Republicans have at their disposal is, I think, this, like, assumption we have that bureaucracy should be efficient and accurate, right? Like, with driver's licenses or birth certificates or death, like, all these functions of government, you want an accurate, the census, we want an accurate count. With voting rolls, right, if our goal is to promote the most voting possible, we want to minimize, like, the bureaucratic pressure to have a very accurate voting roll because people move, right? We don't want a penalty that you moved and you didn't switch. So there will be names in one place of people who won't actually vote. And I mentioned students and young people because they tend to move around more. So I feel like, right, this push that the Republicans have that can look like good government. Well, of course, we just want accurate voting rolls really works against enfranchising, you know, protecting the right to vote of the most people. And so that cycles back to what you're saying is, like, when people talk about an upcoming election, they talk about registration versus what were the votes last election, that's a much better measure, right? How many people voted last election? That's a much better, and what was the breakdown? That's a better starting point than how many registered voters there are. But we all tend to do that, right? So we should all train ourselves to stop in a way. Journalists do it too, right? This idea that because you're right, the day, there's an unknown number of people are going to vote. It's like a probability distribution. And that day of the election, some of those people will show up. And we have a hard time knowing exactly. I mean, we have a pretty good idea from history. And registration isn't irrelevant, but it can be really misleading. I mean, I was doing some turf cutting for some of what I do for canvassing, and Lewisburg 3 has 1,200 voters. Well, there are not 1,200 voters in Lewisburg 3. That's where the students are. So, you know, is it a problem? No, it's not a problem. I don't want to, like, start to purge all of that.
But we also all don't expect them all to vote because they aren't there anymore.
Right. And so your question gets to, like, do we have a good handle on who's going to vote? And that's where, I don't. I was trying to figure out, like, just sort of off the top of your head, do you think Pennsylvania's, this is just like a test of our not of our knowledge, but of our perception. Like, did we have high turnout this year for our primary or low turnout or average turnout for, like, a midterm primary?
I think it was average.
I thought it was average to low. Okay. So when I read in this high primary turnout, right, in other states it's been very different, and that's been kind of a puzzle for me, is like, why is it so different? In our district, I mean, we had competitive congressional races all over the place, record numbers of women running. Like, why didn't that translate into more primary enthusiasm in Pennsylvania? That, to me, that's like an interesting question that no one's answered. Because if this guy, McDonald, is saying high primary turnout will lead to high general election turnout, well, we didn't see that here. I was trying to look up the Pennsylvania turnout.
That's a good question.
Why don't you talk while I look it up?
Although I'd also like to see, I would imagine there was higher turnout among women. So, you know.
Even what are we just talking
in
about
Pennsylvania.
This? In Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania-wide.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at... Wow. I'm looking at a WHYY article, and it says voter turnout was 18% in the Pennsylvania primary elections.
But I think that's fairly typical for midterm
three higher than 2014.
Okay.
Yeah.
About 100,000 more Democrats than Republicans turned out Tuesday, although a higher percentage of registered Republican voters. What? How can that be?
Because they have fewer registered voters.
Oh, right.
Republicans.
Yeah. So if more of ours can turn out, we still have a lower turnout rate.
Yeah.
Because there's more of us.
Or more people.
What do we think about some of these other things? High degree of self-reported interest, high level, early voting doesn't really matter for us in Pennsylvania.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things that, I don't think I've ever lived anywhere with early voting. And so the concept is interesting to me, actually. And I have lived in multiple places.
Yeah, I like.
I have no problem with it. I think it's
oh, I think it's
idea.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
So just get, you know, when you can do it, right? And you got this, you have this window.
Right. It makes so much more sense than the sort of arbitrary and
this day.
Yeah. The crunch on the
one
day.
What if you were really sick that day or something?
Sick or you had to like work. I am from Miami and right. My like a lot of polling places in that area.
What do you have
are,
to serve?
Like, people four hour lines. Right? On day of.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Somebody had on Facebook, I thought this was interesting. I'd be curious to see if primary differs in state, like how independents are treated. Somebody put on Facebook, and so maybe it's just one person, but they were an independent and they thought they didn't get to vote in non-presidential years.
Well,
because they don't get to vote in primaries.
They don't get to vote in primaries.
Right? But, that's reasonable. You know? I mean, it's reasonable in the sense that, like...
Well, there's a lot of things you don't know. Like, even when we went canvassing, I was like, wait a second, you know, they gave us our list, and I'm, like, looking at who... Oh, why are there not candidates here? And so I looked it up. Okay, well, this, there's no... It's an off year for that district, for the Senate, state Senate. But in the other one, there just isn't a Dem, you know?
Right.
So, but I needed to... I didn't know off the top of my head. It wasn't my district. And,
right.
And I didn't know automatically, oh yeah, the state senate is on a, you know.
Well, one thing we had to do too was look up the polling place where next time we go out, I'm gonna make sure I know where the polling place
is. Okay, it was at the top of our page.
Yeah,
pages. Okay.
At the top of the ones
I
produced.
It might have been a different cycle for you where that wasn't
persuasion and not GOTV.
Yeah.
My GOTV scripts have it at the top.
Yeah.
It even has like chairs and tables provided.
Oh, wow. Okay.
like at first I was confused. I was like, what? Like as if I was supposed to be getting chairs and tables. So the last thing from this article. Yeah. Yeah. Last thing from this article is about that I thought there's a little graph and it just basically shows this self-reported enthusiasm. So according to this, and this is a national survey, it's based on registered voters, not, you know, likely voters, which is all kinds of methodological stuff goes on. But like in 2006, which is the last time Chris Carney won in this area in 2006, it was 42 for Democrats versus 33 for likely to support a Republican candidate. So that's 9 points, and it is 8 points now, 67-59. So that signals, you know, much higher turnout. And look at that. Yes.
Is this the same graph?
Yeah.
Because it was 57 in
2006, it was 42.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Graphical literacy.
Thanks for checking.
It's the x-axis. It always kills me.
Yeah. Oh, and then the two. But basically, if it goes like this, when Bush was in his last midterm, the Democrats had more enthusiasm, and they're expecting that now. And the two intervening midterms, which was Obama, the Republicans had a much bigger enthusiasm, had also had enthusiasm gap, but bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically what it comes down to. But this one is huge.
I mean, why couldn't they have?
I mean, why do people, I'm just going to bitch now. Like, why, you just elected a president. Why do you now need to, like, not care? Like, we turn off so easily as an electorate. I mean, we sort of dodged the question earlier about, I was waiting for somebody to be like, if they don't vote, it's their own fault, you know? Like, if you haven't voted in a lot of elections, and then somebody shows up and says, are you going to vote? I was just trying to think of the psychology of this. Are you going to start to build some defensive mechanisms? Like, well, it doesn't really matter, because you don't want to acknowledge that you should have. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wonder if non-voting kind of breeds non-vote. Maybe that seems self.
Oh, we could go all the way the other direction. My cousin who voted for Ralph Nader in 2000 now regrets it. It took until now. Yeah, right. That's huge.
Can you wake up at like 3 a.m? Oh my God, what have I done?
Right.
It's
so
such a random day.
That is huge.
Cold sweat.
So, I mean, it doesn't quite address that, but...
Is he a foreign resident?
No,
okay,
no.
At least
well...
Most disenfranchised in the country is a D.C. resident.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay.
Interesting. I mean, I voted in Virginia in 2000, and it looked like it was clearly to go for Bush, and I was really mad at the Democratic Party. I was really mad at Clinton for throwing populism under the bus, and I thought Gore was a terrible candidate, and I voted for Nader. But... I didn't think he, you know, it mattered in Virginia. There was even a thing then that you could try and swap a vote.
Yeah.
Early, et cetera, internet activism, and I looked into it. But I mean, I say this because just full disclosure, like when
but
people get mad.
Did you regret it soon?
No.
No.
I never regretted it.
Because
I mean, if it had been Florida, I think I might have made a different choice. But I mean, I am sympathetic to at some level. It is your vote, and if you really, if it's an act of conscience, I just think it's ineffective to tell people like that. You know, it's time for you to take one for the team. I don't think it works. I don't know.
Well, but I think the same thing. I guess I brought that up because you were asking about non-voters. I think non-voters are, I mean, often sometimes they're non-voters because they can't be bothered. But they can also be non-voters because they decided they're non-voters. You know, they are disgusted or they, I mean, it's a position.
I mean, I'm just saying my own like emotional and mental reactions swing wildly from I will do whatever I possibly can to convince them to vote. Some days and other days I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, you can veg out to TV and video games and whatever, you know, your distraction is the other 364 days of the year, just this one time. But I'm aware that that can sound, of course, very elitist and blah, blah, blah. And if you're, you know, if you feel like the system's never worked for you. I mean, this actually came to my mind the other day. I have somebody who voted for me for borough council, and she really wanted water fountains installed in the park, and she was asking me about it, and I don't have anything to report. And she was excited, and I'm like, I mean, that's such a lame answer, but, you know, a lot of people vote, and it feels like it doesn't make a difference, and that's a totally legitimate experience. So we come back, and we're like, this time it will matter, maybe.
Well, it does seem like... I think it's going to matter in a lot of ways, and maybe those ways are becoming more visible. In fact, I don't know, all this podcasting, people have been, you don't listen to Pod Save America. So I'm trying to listen to Pod Save America a little bit. I can only handle so much.
It's too bro-y?
No, it's just like long conversations.
Oh.
Like, I don't listen to us.
Yeah.
Have you ever?
No.
Yeah. Oh, come on, I listen to everyone at least another time. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm checking for quality control.
I'm glad you're doing that.
Do you think
someone
you're? If I hadn't been, you might not have been here. I mean,
right.
you're good content.
Okay. Well, that's good. Or you just sort of keep inviting me on because you don't know if the quality's horrible. All I'm saying. So they're on and they were listing all the reasons why these midterm elections matter, why governorships matter. Strangely enough, they had this whole list and they're obsessing about how they had three things. The issue was they did not point out the possibility of a whole bunch of governors calling a constitutional convention.
Oh, what's
and
that
I was
mean?
Like, I was like,
what's that?
That's like,
change the
am I allowed to say? Am I allowed to say the title of that book?
Yeah.
Rat fucked.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah, we.
Okay.
Yeah. We're not on radio ever.
Okay, well you know that book.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the basic.
Just a sec. We're opening the Lefroig because we want to hear Sam say some really
good.
Interesting things.
Now things are getting good. Yeah. Wait, let me clean this up.
Okay, sorry. So
in
if
fact,
the governor.
The podcast listeners have actually requested
more.
Sam drinks scotch. That's why they brought the drink.
In this quick break, I will say we would love reviews on iTunes and. Or other platforms, feedback. Oh, oh, that's plenty.
For good all the Lord, people who actually Jesus. Do listen to it.
Here, do you want to swap?
No, no, I just want two
fingers. Okay.
Okay, what's a constant? Yeah, to your health.
Well, salut. Constant.
The Freud.
Right. God bless you.
If we had a majority of the governors, the Democrats.
And they, no, the point is that the R's have been stacking it so that they're in position practically to call a constitutional convention and pull all sorts of stuff.
Oh my God.
Right? And it wasn't even on the Pod Save America's list. I was like, what? Well, why does this not occur to you? I mean, have you not read the book? I don't know.
Oh, and Rat Fucked It was in the book. Yeah. I got
you. Have you heard about this case that's working its way through courts now that may extend pardon power to the states?
Yes. What is it called?
So the president could pardon for state level crimes?
Yeah. That you can't be, currently you could be tried in both of them.
Uh-huh.
Right? Isn't that the one? The Garcia? Correct. Or Garza or something like that?
Yeah, the Garza one, I think that's right. They, so, I mean, like,
it's
right
almost
now,
like double jeopardy, but it's not quite. That's what the argument against
the argument
it is.
Right,
but
right.
It isn't exactly. It's that you could also have violated something in a different jurisdiction.
Right.
And so it's not the same as being tried for the same crime in the same jurisdiction.
Right. So I wonder if, who knows what Mueller's investigation is doing, but if they're reserving a whole piece for the state of New York to kind of just pounce upon. But
Gamble versus the United States?
That could be.
I don't remember the name of the case, but I mean, to your point, there's all kinds of rat fucking potential going on.
Well, and it's all long-term, long game, Koch brothers basically planning, and it's just weird to me that it's not front of mind for people. People are talking about how governorships make a big difference in people's everyday lives, and I'm like, yes, that's true, but what about this bigger picture? This is serious.
Yeah.
Extremely serious.
Well, so that kind of maybe sets us up for...
Which, go ahead. I just want to make one last point about people who don't vote.
Yeah, go ahead.
And also a little bit about voter enthusiasm. I think they sort of are tied together. I think at this point in time, if you're not, if you're not riled up and going to vote because you're really pissed off about or really afraid of the current state of things, there's nothing else that can happen to motivate you to vote. I can't think of what kind of catastrophic event could happen that if you are not already at to the point. I mean, my head has exploded multiple times.
Food lines.
Yeah.
Something that you can't ignore.
Yeah.
Something that you that impacts you very directly, very immediately, very personally. And I'm not saying, I'm not claiming that, that's going to happen, but right now, all sorts of, the impossible becomes the implausible, and then it happens.
But I don't think that's not going to happen, right, in the next, and I think any gains that are made, any increases in voter turnout that are made from here on out, and they talk about the Kavanaugh bump, and you really think about it.
He got her pregnant?
Yes, exactly.
Sorry.
Now,
aliens made him pregnant.
It was an immaculate conception.
An immaculate coercion.
Exactly. So but really, people were talking about that, and I think there's some validity in that. Only in that, if you weren't riled up and pissed off and ready to vote the SOBs out of office before the Kavanaugh hearings, there was nothing about the Kavanaugh hearings that was going to add to that to make you even more riled up. I mean, yes, of course, it was pretty outrageous what happened. But if you were already ready to go out and vote Democratic before those hearings, and I think the only people who got energized and riled up and wanted to go out and vote were Republicans. I mean,
right.
I think.
But that's
because all these the pundits always talk about the suburban white woman in Philadelphia suburbs or whatever suburbs that voted for Trump or maybe didn't vote for Hillary in the last election.
Right. The fact that actually the Kavanaugh thing backfired on the Dems I do believe it did. I agree with you.
Right.
Does not mean it was the wrong thing to.
Oh.
It backfired on the Dems because the R's are insane.
I completely agree with you, but you know, most people at that point in time didn't need that pageant to understand that, right? I mean, that's a known.
Well, that's showing how there is actual real strategy actually on the other side. What I keep describing as you lose either way. No matter what you do, you lose. And that, I hate chess. I feel like I'm constantly in this. I do this and I lose, or I do the opposite, I either don't react and I lose, or I react.
What game do you win?
You play against Bobby Fischer.
But what game do you win? Do you win sometimes? Is there a game that you do win sometimes?
Oh, I'm really good at spatial ones.
So like 3D Jenga.
Tetris. Yes.
Jenga.
Yeah.
So you want to change politics from chess to Jenga?
Yeah, I want it to be about building a good world.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, we're going to come back to this sometime. It's like, which board game is the metaphor for politics, and which board game should be the metaphor for politics. But I want to take what you were saying. If you say sorry for interrupting one more time, I'm going to smack you.
You're too far apart.
I kind of forgot what I was going to say. What I hear you guys saying is, like, the people who were paying attention to politics before the Kavanaugh hearings on our side, they were already paying attention. And so nothing about the Kavanaugh hearings led them to pay more attention. And the Republicans, some of them probably weren't paying a lot of attention, and now they are. So now let's take a step back and say, because I feel like what you're saying, Bill, is like, sorry, who? Really gross belch, sorry. Who, you know, who could watch that and not be affected by that? That's what you're saying, right?
Yes.
Okay, so here's my thought is, like, of the, you know, imagine we want 100 people to vote Democratic. Like, we know about 60 of them, and those 60 pay attention to things like Kavanaugh hearings, and they're going to vote. The other 40 that we're trying to get to vote, they're just not even paying attention. Like, that doesn't affect their life. And so more information is going to lead them to vote. Like, we need a model that says some people vote for this reason. Like, for a lot of us, it might be knowing about issues and research, but other people might be voting because their neighbor told them to, or their friend, or their partner. And so I think some of the voter, now the GOTV stuff is about that, because putting more information in front of these people is not going to lead to more votes. That's what I wanted to say. What did you want to say, Sam?
No, I think that's where it is. Do you know where your polling place is? It's we're down to sort of like occupational therapy type things.
Yeah.
Like, let's make a plan.
Yeah.
Do you know what time of day?
I really
you're
like that. GOTV
gonna,
is.
Yeah. Are we gonna? We're gonna
occupational therapy for democracy.
We're gonna envision.
That is the name of this podcast. Occupational therapy for democracy.
You know, this is Monday. This is Tuesday.
Like, in every pill box, put a little like coupon to redeem your I voted sticker. Oh my God, that's great.
But basically, I mean, you're just like, you're gonna have a vision of yourself. Let's close our eyes and imagine ourselves walking or getting in your car and going to the polls. And do you know what happens? What are you gonna wear? Are you gonna have a thing that your sticker is gonna go on your coat or on your? I mean, it's literally.
I am very motivated by the sticker. I will say, I really like getting the sticker.
But you're right. You're right, Sam. Yeah, at this point in time, right?
In fact, it was funny. I had the Democratic GOTV people come to my door and say, "Do you have a plan to vote?" And I wanted to be like, I was like, "This is fun." It's like being a kung fu master and having like a brown belt come and try and show you some things. And I was like, "I'm gonna put the signs up for the candidates at my polling place because I'm a precinct captain, and then I'm gonna vote right after that." And they were like, "Oh, okay." So the next topic
for Marino.
Yeah, for Marino. Oh my God. I just want to lay out a couple of pieces on our sort of collective table and see where it goes, because there's been a lot of things that sort of different news pieces, but they all kind of relate to like a bigger concern that I have, which is America's slide or march or shift or whatever you want to call it towards authoritarianism. So that's the big picture, and it seems like there are several pieces that relate to that. One is, and these will all be in the show notes, but Steve King, the representative from Iowa, and I think it's one of the most Trump districts or something like that, did an interview in Austria with a publication that is really, you know, in the U.S., like the translation would be like far-right, proto-fascist, but masquerading as intellectual seriousness. Does that sound right, Sam, from what you know?
Well, Okay.
All right.
Who's in Syriac?
Oh yeah, uncensored.
Uncensored.
Who's
in Syriac?
Okay.
Which totally does fit into that. Like, you know, our ideas are so radical they would censor us if they could. Yeah. So that's one piece. The second piece is, and I don't know as much about this, but the Proud Boys, and is it in New York? Beat some people up, and then in Oregon there was like a weapons cache.
They're all over the place.
That the police knew about but didn't warn people. And then
I didn't hear about the weapons cache.
I'd have to track it down. But basically it was that, I think it was in Oregon, like the local police knew that this group, that one of these, I don't know if it was Proud Boys or another right-wing violent group, had a weapons cache hidden and didn't like seize it or do anything about it, and why was kind of up in the air. I mean, maybe they're waiting for them to use it so they could charge them with more other crimes. But, you know, the fear is that there was some tacit endorsement, or like the right's favorite thing is like, you know, these violent extremists who broke some windows for a store, right? And then that justifies whatever we do to them. I mean, that's the sort of classic, and I'm not a historian of fascism, but the stuff I've heard on interviews and read is, you know, you often get that. I mean, it's going on right now. It's like, just today there was somebody, Giuliani or somebody, saying, look, you know, they're so violent, and it basically makes the idea that whatever is done to protesters is justified because they were violent in the first place. And then the last one is this thing from this one clip that we listened to and confirmed, Carl Bernstein, the famous reporter, in an interview, sort of sandwiched between talking about how to talk about lies, lays down this bombshell, I'm going to read it, where he says, this is Carl Bernstein, his direct quote, I talked to people in touch with the White House on Friday who believe that if the congressional
midterms,
the congressional midterms are very close and the Democrats were to win by 5 or 7 seats, that Trump is already talking about how to throw legal challenges into the courts, sow confusion, declare victory, actually, and say that the election's been illegitimate. And then he moved on to say, you know, and somebody should investigate this. So those are the pieces. And I guess the question, I'll just throw it out and step back, is like, you know, is it too early or too late to say that we're 1934 or 35 Germany? Is it too early or too late to say that this is authoritarianism?
Well, I'm going to throw to Sarah Kendzior, basically.
Who's she?
She's
on Twitter.
Been writing about this for a long time. She's basically a scholar of authoritarian regimes.
Can you shoot me a link and I'll put it in the show notes?
Yeah, definitely. And she has her own podcast now called Gaslit Nation.
That's a good title.
Which I actually have been trying to listen to, but like all podcasts, it's just a bunch of talking, like hanging out. I don't really have time for the hanging out.
Well, you need to do more house cleaning or something. Or
her writing is fantastic.
We'll talk to you about how to get more power. Yeah.
Yeah,
you need to stop biking.
It's like 3 minutes by bike.
Is it K-E-N-Z-I-O-R?
That is correct. D-E-Z-I-O-R.
So anyway,
Polish,
you're going to throw out.
She has been, I mean, prior to the election, she was pointing out problematic relationships. She and another person that she does her podcast with were pointing out the issues with Russian oligarchs and the whole Ukraine connection and with Paul Manafort. And basically they have been very clear on all of this and from the very beginning. And now I think the people who have been listening to them are like, 1933 to 1938 is only 5 years, right? And so, you know, are we 33, but was 19, you know.
Was 2016 33,
yeah.
And we're further.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a sort of rule of thumb in American politics, and people are talking about it, is like, once you start saying Nazi, you've gone crazy, or once you start saying fascist, you've gone crazy. But I don't think this is premature. I mean, I
agree. I wouldn't have thought this maybe even 6 months ago, but the more that things are unfolding the way they are, it's just kind of, I mean, did you see Trump at the last fucking rally? First of all, we're saying rally. I mean, we're saying rally not just every year, we're saying it every couple of weeks, okay? So I'll just put that aside. But when he started talking about this Gianforte, he's the guy in Montana who beat up the Vice reporter.
Yeah.
And joking about it and saying, oh, you know, that guy, I don't want to get into a scuffle with him. He'll body slam you. He does a real great job of body slamming. Not even within a week after the Khashoggi goes into the consulate in Turkey.
Right.
Gets tortured, killed, and hacked to pieces.
Right.
I mean, is this, you know, you can always, and that's the thing about Trump, you can always sort of say, well, he's just so stupid, he has no idea what he's doing, but I think he knows what he's doing. I think there's some, you know, this is a tacit.
You can get an F at Wharton and be a smart fascist.
Right. Is a master messenger. And he's sort of signaling all of these things that are coming out of a ferment, which he's willing to signal to. He's like, this is useful.
But he's not even doing it that well. It's so clumsy and pathetic. Right.
We've talked about this before the podcast, that his nicknames suck. If you go back and look at George Bush's nicknames, that guy, I didn't like him, but he was good at nicknames.
The week after the election.
Turd Blossom. Yeah. That was Karl Rove, Turd Blossom.
The week after the election, Richard Spencer was using the term Lügenpresse, right?
Lying, what does that mean?
Press, yeah. Lying press, fake press. It's a German Nazi term.
I thought it was like candy bar coverage, like nougat. Okay.
And he was using that in an address in D.C. at an event, right? Where people were giving the... But salute.
Yes. Oh, right.
Farm salute. So it's very hard. I mean, and people are like, that's a really tiny number of people. I'm like, I don't care. They were inside the Beltway. They were emboldened. They were feeling emboldened. Totally. And they
were open about it. This is in an
internet-enabled age where all of these people know each other and have found each other on the internet. So while it might have been tiny little cells that didn't have enough momentum on their own, they nationally are like a very effective coalition of wackos, right? They have enough critical mass online in order to be able to pull off the stuff they're doing.
I mean,
and recruit people.
Exactly.
I mean, one of the things when this conversation comes up for me, so the conversation is, can the U.S., you know, could we wake up and become a kind of authoritarian / fascist state? And so one of the concerns for me is especially for the media and the pundits and the responsible adults, you know, I'm putting that in quotes, is to understand, I feel like this American exceptionalism somehow tries to trump that and say, well, that wouldn't happen here. I'm like, of course it could. Of course it could.
Well, that's why would you think it couldn't? Worrying about right now. They're all like, why does this happen every time? Like,
what is this?
This is, democracies are fundamentally vulnerable to populism and strongmen. Like,
I want to come back to that. Keep going.
Okay, and we just keep playing it out. We can't help ourselves. Agitprop, and also the inertia that allows people to deny that anything is happening.
But see, I would say that I'm a populist.
Right.
So,
but are you a populist with a rabid mad dog authoritarian?
Yes, of course I am. No, no, but because there's two, and actually I feel like this comes back to something you said earlier about Trump. But, you know, I read this in a book by this guy, John Judas, and he was probably channeling other people. But there's two flavors. There's left-wing and right-wing populism. And left-wing populism, let's start with that, tends to say or says, you know, we the people are being, you know, oppressed or taken advantage of by an elite. And we point to them. And generally, it's, you know, the corporate class, the confluence of money and politics. And Bernie Sanders' campaign, I think, is a great example of an expression of that leftist popular anger. The rightist popular anger says, we the people are being oppressed by this third party that's co-opted our real, you know, our quote-unquote real, which is why nostalgia and calls to nationalism, all that matters.
It's an outside force.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Out-group demonization.
Yeah. And so the humor thing, I think, is important because humor, you're saying Trump and sort of laughing about slamming the person. In general, we should have Sheila Linton on, but in general, you know, humor works when you're poking fun at what is what the audience agrees is a powerful force, right? Like picking on homeless people is not that funny. Like no one makes a lot of jokes about homeless people because it's not funny. You know, we use humor often to poke fun. And so that joke works only if the audience assumes that a reporter, of course, is part of the media, is part of this powerful cabal, this outside force.
Correct.
You see what I'm saying? Correct. So he often is able to kind of shield his actual fascism by making it seem like humor. And he, so he has plausible deniability to like the quote-unquote mainstream press because they're like, well, he didn't really, I mean, he keeps trying to say this, well, he didn't really mean body slam him. He was being funny or he's making a joke. But that joke only works, you see what I'm saying, if you already think that the media or the UN or the cultural elites or Hollywood are...
That's why I keep saying that this is the situation where we're already at checkmate. Right, we lose no matter what.
We're a checkmate with authoritarianism.
Because
you really think that?
I was trying to say this earlier. Like no matter what I do, like with Kavanaugh, it doesn't matter. Right. And similarly with the press, like you can't give people more information because they have been set up to deny the information. In fact, the information that ought to counteract their reaction actually reinforces it.
And it's been around. But the other thing, it's been around for 3 years now, right?
Well,
like 3 years of Trump.
But Fox has been around for a long time.
Yeah, that's the whole... Trump is a feature, not a bug.
Right, and he's not in a vacuum. It has to have this right-wing media universe to reinforce it so that you can say we're the alternative. And the right-wing media universe, it has to be unmoored from reality itself. It has to be willing to go along with random, you know, outrageous statement of the day over and over and over again. And so basically, once people realize that lying just through your teeth on a constant basis was a strategy, they could run with it. And the left is like, I have no idea what to do with this. I don't even know how to respond.
Okay.
Everything is wrong. And
but I want to go back.
This is undemocratic and it's like.
But you can't counteract it.
Right.
Like
if
the premise is.
Right.
Like I'm going.
This is the key question.
But the other thing is that when it started, you know, 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, you were like, you know, this is ridiculous. Right?
Yes.
This is comical. This is cartoonish.
Right. Well, we remember.
Right.
It wasn't it Karl Rove that said, you're the reality based? No,
mm-hmm.
it was, or Dick Cheney said.
No.
You were
sure
the reality based. And as if reality based was dismissible. Entirely dismissible.
Right.
I remember that. And to me, though, they still thought that they could like play that game in like sort of the political sphere, and it didn't have like bigger consequences. And I don't know if this will make sense. I feel like we're kind of in. Maybe we're all being a little bit nebulous about our concepts. But anyway, like Cheney, whether it was Cheney or Rove, it was that idea, right? Like we can manipulate the media and facts for an agenda, but they knew it was a game. Trump doesn't know it's a game. It is reality for him and for his minions. And that's the difference, right? And so I feel like you're talking about Fox News, and I feel like at one point in time, you know, it was, you know, the dog was like a sort of particular kind of a vision of America that would protect corporate rights and whatever. And Fox News was the tail. And now that tail really is wagging the dog. And a lot of the 2016 angst among Republicans, I read it as like the sort of party insiders, the establishment, being worried about this sort of populist anger that they unleashed, but they thought they could control it or tamp it down, and then they didn't. I mean, that's the moment we're at. I mean, I was saying to my wife the other day, we need an actual conservative party, right? We need a soft landing spot for people who maybe will never vote for Democrats, but right now they have nowhere to go, right? Like, there's no actual Republican, like, principled Republican establishment.
In a position of power.
Yeah, right?
Like, right, there are a fair number of...
Like, your choices...
And whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, like, the National Review has got, 10,000 subscribers.
And the ones that are sort of, you know, nominally anti-Trump in power, like Flake. And,
yeah.
You know, they're milquetoast. They don't really...
Oh, my God, he's so, you know...
No, but there are, like, Max Boot and Tom Nichols.
Yeah.
And, you know,
What's his name? Steve Schmidt or whatever.
Right, there are
Steve Schmidt. What's the husband of... Who's the White House advisor who's
Carvel?
Awful? No,
oh,
now.
Oh,
super
no,
skinny,
Tom,
blonde.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, her husband.
David Fromm is another.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they're not in a position of power. They're not.
Exactly.
They're not, I mean,
right.
they're position of power,
but you can at least,
that is not standing.
It's
right.
Like this famous thing in history.
Not willing to stand.
Like William.
You can see them casting about because they're like, wait a second. I mean, some of them said, that's it. everyone vote blue. Like, right. We need to burn it all right. down. Like, they've gone that other direction.
There's some piece of history where, like, William Buckley around 64 or just before or after, like, the John Birch Society was getting more and more powerful, and he basically was like, no, you guys are fucking lunatics. Right. We are not part of the conservative movement. And I feel like we're living through that, except that the Birch Society won.
Yep. Okay, well, they did. Have you met the Koch brothers?
They're Birchers, right.
Oh, yeah.
No, I actually like that. I like calling them Koch brothers.
Okay.
I think that's hilarious. I think we should do that. Until Rush Limbaugh calls those Democratic politicians instead of Democrat, you know, that whole, like, rat, they're trying to say the rat thing. So this has been interesting. I liked it. I'm afraid we got a little mushy in terms of the clear, bright line. But the issue is, like, we all seem to agree that we're moving towards authoritarianism, right? At some...
There are people who have been outlining this very clearly.
When does it become irreversible? What do we do? Like, when do we fucking hit the streets? Like, I don't know. Or you were saying democracy is vulnerable, Sam. And so...
Well, that's what's very concerning to me is that, like, on the one hand, the resistance is... it's heartening, obviously. It's great that people are motivated and sort of in motion. But it also feels very fragile.
And disjointed and not focused.
Right? Not focused. And also, it's just vulnerable to these long-term strategic moves by the Koch brothers to basically position themselves to screw us over. So just even the fact that because of gerrymandering, we need to get extreme... Like, we can't just...
We have to win by 5 points or something.
Yeah, we have to win by a lot in order to actually
Winning the 50-yard dash with a 5-pound weight around your
exactly.
ankle.
And so I think that is further demoralizing. And I think also the game is obscure enough that it's really hard for random people to get their brains around it, right?
Well, there's this metaphor about the frog in the water, you know, which actually I read once. This cracked me up that they talked to a frog expert, and he's like, no frog would stay in the water. Like, as soon as it got hot, they would jump out.
Okay, but the frogs are staying in the water to get transgender, like, transformation. And they are.
As the water heats up?
No, not as the water heats up, but as we fill it with chemicals.
Oh.
Our minute...
Wait, we have really mixed some metaphors here.
Okay, no, I'm talking about actual... situations with frogs having hermaphroditic results from
that's
exposure
a problem.
To
but
pesticides.
let's stick to the
right.
metaphor.
Right? Yeah, but that is a good way to say how this insane discussion is keeping us away from issues that really matter, like
clean water
and the environment. We can't even address those issues, which are. About to burst through the windows.
Right. Right now,
we have to talk about.
We've got a so-called president like railing against migrants and claiming he's going to cut off aid to the countries they're coming from, which will actually increase the flow of migrants.
Correct.
And yet, and creating a space force, and et cetera, et cetera. And yet, Flint still has no clean water.
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on, though.
Sorry. I apologize.
We're doing it wrong.
No, but like, and we're going to kind of end on this point, but like, I was trying to imagine like...
Wait, it's over?
Close. and I'll be curious what
Scott,
any listeners I know. But like let's stick with the frog. I want to come back to the stupid frog, okay? So the frog is us, right? And we're in this water. And I know the metaphor is flawed because apparently frogs would jump out. And whether or not they have girl frog parts or boy frog parts.
Now it's ruined by Pepe.
I'm not right. Okay, forget the fucking frog, okay? New metaphor, okay?
The Nazi bird, you've seen the...
Yeah.
We're a human, okay? And we're in a society. And it's getting incrementally more and more authoritarian and fascist. And is there a point... So I think there's two questions, I guess, in my head. Is like, is there a point at which it's irreversible... because like if we go full on, if Trump like tries to declare these elections, like, wait, I'm breaking my own rule about staying focused, but I was just trying to say there's not a United States across the ocean to come save us. Like China's going to invade, United States is going to, no, I mean, the ascendant powers are all authoritarian. Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Russia, didn't Brazil just elected an authoritarian. Like, there are very few. It feels like the 1930s when, you know, some people would go over and fight fascism in Spain. Like, yeah, who are the ascendant?
It's Merkel and Macron
and Trudeau. Yeah. That is not a big fucking army.
Yeah.
That is not a big fucking army.
Look for the Germans to start militarizing very soon.
Yeah. Great. That'll go over. Great. Yeah.
You know,
NATO.
Why wouldn't they? Do they have any reason not to do it?
No, they should. But
they have a lot of cultural reasons not.
Yeah,
to.
Yeah, they have tons of cultural reasons, but I would if I were them.
So there's. I feel like there's two questions. Like one, like for this human who's in the society that's getting incremented, like we need a word. Like I was thinking, crossing the Rubicon, right? Or like we need a word that expresses that point when you cross that point, which we've crossed a place. And now it's irreversible. And because we need to act, we need to shift our tactics before we hit that point. Am I making sense?
Right. And
what's the point of no return for this for the slow moving coup? I've heard Bill Maher call it the slow moving coup.
Well, and Sarah Kendzior,
you're asking when is the torch?
I'm actually not asking when the moment is. I'm asking for a word. I'm playing a word game. You know, like crossing the Rubicon means, well, maybe it's that, but we could play with that. You know, crossing the Fascicon.
Yeah. No. When are you rat fucked?
When are you rat fucked? That's good. You may be rat harassed, but when you're rat fucked, you can't turn back.
Once you're rat fucked, you're rat fucked.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. See, this is why I give you the scotch. Okay.
Right.
So are we rat fucked or are we rat harassed?
I did bring seltzer. I just want to point that out.
But no, I mean, because if any of us if we, do we really think we've crossed a point where it's irreversible? Like if Trump, I meant irreversible, unchangeable. I mean, if Trump tries to declare, if the Democrats win the House in the midterms, and it's clear that they did, and Trump tries to throw up the flack and the sort of administrative flack and legal challenges and muddy the waters and say it's not clear, and what would he do? Deny that Congress is? I mean, all along with Mueller, he's been trying to deny his legitimacy.
Nullify the election. He could declare...
Constitutionally, he could?
Yeah, he could...
Does he have that power?
I think he could...
This is where I need to read my constitution.
Well, I think he could declare it, like, just questionable. That he could declare...
He could in the media.
He could in the media.
I mean, let's assume he'll do that.
He could declare sort of a national emergency. He could call out the National Guard. Because one of the things he's been setting up is that the left is hopelessly violent. He's actually been priming the right to be violent, and the right is actually enacting violence on a regular basis, and the right is prepared to counteract all this violence from all these lefty gun owners, you know.
Which is good, right.
I mean, this is where the governors come back in.
Exactly.
And I mean, this is fucked up, right?
No, he's basically set it up so that he will, and they're doing this on a regular basis, provoking a little bit of left-wing violence and saying, look, the left is violent, meanwhile, the right, unremarked.
Like a few windows get broken, right?
Yeah.
Like storefront windows get broken.
Meanwhile, the right is unremarkedly stomping on people's faces next to the police, right?
They were saying with their arms crossed, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and right, you know, I mean,
and like, that's,
how many people have Antifa killed? How many fatalities have occurred
well,
as a result of Antifa?
But that's an important point because people like Rand Paul are saying the incivility is getting dangerous. Someone's going to get hurt.
Right.
And we're like, someone was already hurt.
Yeah.
Name was Heather Heyer.
Yeah,
that's right.
And
right.
That is invisible to them. They're like, no, she wasn't killed by the left. And we're like, exactly. You know. So incivility, like being yelled at restaurants,
is
parallel to
Jews will not replace us. Or,
yes.
or backing your car.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah, I sure. And you know, it's crazy. And it's working. That's the problem.
Well, what's even more problematic to me is that if you actually try to follow these things in the cesspools of the internet,
which
you can't
do.
Tell what's going on.
Which you do.
I vaguely.
More than me.
Vaguely. But because there's this whole cult of insincerity, and
yes.
You can't tell what is being said.
Mm.
Sort of straight, and what is being said in ironically or backwards.
A sort of plausible deniability.
Yes, exactly. I mean, and it's so baffling that other people march into it and can't figure out what's going on and then march away. But it's still operating, right? They're still communicating. In other words, we're beyond dog whistles. We're at like a secret language of dog whistles.
That seems harder to detect.
Right, but it's very effective within the milieu.
I don't like your metaphor, because I actually think this is becoming more in the open. Like, the reason it doesn't matter that there's only a few Richard Spencers is because Trump is speaking their language.
Right.
So it's not dog whistles. It's almost like our hearing is being adjusted, so we hear the dog whistles, but we're not bothered by it. These metaphors are like all over the place.
We're not bothered. What I'm talking about, though, is that...
What about the frog?
Subterranean, well, Pepe is alive and well.
Yeah, that's true.
And in this subterranean area, they are organizing with this really complex language, which people, you can't just dip into. You can't just sort of go and see what's going on, because it's illegible.
But that makes me
going into Latvia and trying to understand what people are saying.
Well, that makes me think
it's
that
like going into Cockney English, right? I mean, it's all code.
Okay, we've got to wrap this up.
Sorry.
So, but is this trolling you're talking about?
It's their own actual communication space.
Hold on. So when...
This is not trolling.
What for you is a trigger that...
Pitchforks and torches?
Yeah, I'm trying to say the general strike. Like, if that's a model, like, what's the trigger for you that you're... You know, you're going to suspend your life activities, going to work, your kids going to school. Like, I'm just going to throw that out as a possibility. Like, for a while, we've been talking about Mueller and, like, the Mueller investigation somehow being, like, there's been people have been organizing for that, or basically the firing of Rosenstein would be, like, the signal. But I feel like the signal now switches. Like, if Trump tries to do, I don't know what it is exactly, but tries to do something around the midterms, that's the signal. And we shift from playing within the rules to...
Mass protests, mass civil disobedience.
Yeah, a million people surround the White House, 10 million. So what's that, you know?
Well, I mean, if there's a Democratic victory in the House, and he tries to reverse it, and it looks like he's going to be successful in that attempt.
We had a mini moment of this, right? When he did the Muslim ban, I mean, that was... I feel like that hasn't been, like, well historicized. I mean, so it's been a year and a half. But, the country basically was like, no.
Right.
Like, sort of the power of the people.
I think if he makes an attempt like this, there are going to be officials. I think I do have some faith in our government. The government, the rank and file...
The civil servants.
Civil servants really do... care about this country and about their role in how the government works, and who will push back. Now, he's done a lot to undercut them in the last 2 years, but there are people there who would say, no, this is legitimate, and you know, your claims are wrong.
But that's where the militias come in and the and the right wing.
How many guns do they really have?
You really don't want to know.
Well, I know they have a lot of guns. How many? Actually, I should have said how many people. Like,
they have guns.
At some level, I have a hard time. Exactly. Like, if the National Guard, if we game this out, if Trump tries to say the elections are illegitimate, and this is like we need a constitutional lawyer, right? So Madeleine Dean wins, or let's say Mark Friedenberg wins, and he's going to Congress to take his seat, and somehow Trump tries to stop him with the power of, like, law backed up by the military. I mean, this is what we're talking about. And I mean, I don't even know what the constitutional mechanisms for are, because we didn't cover this in fucking eighth grade civics, you know. We just talked about when a bill becomes a law. We didn't talk about this.
Right.
But somehow I can imagine that goes down.
Thank God the guiding hand of Brett Kavanaugh.
Right, yeah, thank God. Or that's a good example. The Supreme Court...
Samuel,
you know, yeah, like Trump calls out the National Guard to prevent Democrats from taking their seats because it's an illegitimate election, and we sue, and it goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, like, rules in favor of Trump because of the unitary fucking executive theory that Kavanaugh believes. Like, where did I get on this? Like, if that's my trigger, that's too late.
Right.
But I can't go by myself, right? Like, I can't go down to Washington and, like, surround the White House by myself.
I think that's part of the strategy. They are... In the same way that they have their finger on the pulse of the right and are poking and prodding them as needed to sort of agitate their authoritarian tendencies and their desire for outgroup tribalist demonstrations, they are also poking the left in ways that confuse, distract, and demoralize.
Look, I'm tribalist too. It's just that my tribe includes everyone.
Right. But what I'm pointing out is what I'm pointing out is that they are, he knows that, or they know that. And so they are, I do feel like we're being manipulated, we're being taxed, so that everyone is really overextended, right? Like emotionally.
You mean literally taxed?
No, I mean
emotionally taxed.
Right. We're being emotionally overextended such that it reduces our ability to react. It reduces the level of outrage we can muster when something additional
gets turned
on. I mean, imagine any president before this telling the tenth of the lies and Trump.
A hundredth. I mean, I don't have energy to deal with horse face and paying off a porn star.
Hypersensitization. I mean,
but my point is that that's all part of a strategy. It's a... And it's not about owning the libs. It's literally about transforming us into a sort of ineffective...
Okay, but if we're talking about it, we really have to wrap up. If we're talking about it, has it gone too far? Have we reached a point of irreversibility? I mean, I'm going to say no because I'm still doing normal democratic organizing.
And so, I have kids and I want them to live in the world.
Right.
I live in some semblance of it.
Sarah Kendzior and Andrew Chalupa, her co-podcaster, would argue that basically if that's the case and we want to cling to normalcy or lengthen the viability of the democracy, we need to really... knuckle down on things like freedom of the press and the press doing what it needs to do instead of being manipulated. And that's where we're falling down. So,
I mean, in a tiny way, like this podcast, okay, I mean, this is a tiny example of like the cost of the production of information goes down. So the fucking Daily Item is not talking about the rise of fascism.
Nope.
Like a lot of the mainstream media is asleep at the switch.
Okay,
but
can we talk about the, for example... the controversy over pseudonyms on Facebook?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Really? So do you think I'm contributing to the problem?
No, but I think it's all related. And it's related in the same way. Like, you have two...
I'm not aware of this.
Two groups.
I proposed on a thing on Facebook in a group that's about about the Buffalo Valley, like our whole area, Lewisburg, East Buffalo. There are people on it who I don't know who they are, and they clearly have a pseudonym.
Oh, I see.
And so I put out... I mean, it's really interesting. Yeah, that whole thing could be a whole podcast by itself. I put out that it bothers me because, to me, like, that forum should exist to encourage people to have dialogue. And if you have pseudonyms, you invite flaming and attacking.
Of course. Right?
You
can be anonymous and say
Now, I will say that, like we've already said, if you personally attack people, you know, your comments will be banned or whatever. But for me, it was also because it's not just that space by itself. Like, that forum exists and almost everyone on it. Like, I know who they are. If I met them, I'd be like, oh, you're Nancy Steckel. You're Jim. I know Jim Buckwell. You're Tina Provent. This is the things you said. So to me, it's like the one place where you can connect local real politics to these online discussions. And I was hoping for that. So I suggested that we shouldn't have anybody with pseudonyms. And it erupted into a whole thing where generally it seems like the people who are probably Republican or conservative or libertarian, they thought that I was exerting a kind of fascist authority. I mean, only one of them said it, but... Is that a good summary?
Yeah, and what all I'm trying to say is that that's an example of an asymmetry of communication, and we're not realizing or reacting to asymmetry. So if we want to be ready for some bright line, we need to retool and start assessing our current situation in terms of these asymmetries. In that particular case, it's really minor, but it's basically that... There are categories of pseudonyms that are purposefully provocative. They have embed insulting phraseology, and so
no, that's a good point. I wasn't even addressing the content of the one pseudonym that this is all on Facebook and in public groups. I don't know why we're being discreet.
But that's not the only one. I think this is actually common across.
Okay.
And so,
I've lost the thread of this. How does the pseudonyms relate to the bright line of fascism?
The way in which I've lost it now, but the main way in which it relates is that basically we're being played, we're getting distracted by small things, and we need to reassess. And what we're going to find ourselves doing by nature is address the little symptoms, but we're not going to get a good picture of the strategy we should be pursuing. And that's an example, like the pseudonyms is, it's an example of sort of getting sidetracked. Like it was an attempt to try to address
I wish I hadn't started it that weekend.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was a good discussion, but like somebody was like, why are you spending time on this? I was like, I don't know. I was being spontaneous. Okay, we've gone way over.
Okay,
And somehow I was trying to, like, you know, crossing the fasciacon. I don't know if that works, you know. I was some sort of, like, that point at which it's irreversible. Like, when do the citizens of the democratic society, like the frog in the water, the temperature's gotten so hot that we're going to die. We cannot recover our democracy. And so I wanted two things. One, are we at that point or not? Which I realize is a really hard question. And also, just because I like words, like, what is a good word for that? Like, I feel like there should be some German word, you know, like like frog fascism or, yeah. The point, we don't need to come up with the word now.
Okay. But,
so, you said, we started to have a wrap up, like, you know, if Trump messes the election, I'm going to say the same thing. I mean, if Trump fires Rosenstein tomorrow, move on, and other people have set up that's like the beginning of mass protests. I mean, I feel like we're a little bit in uncharted territory. To the extent to which past social movements are some sort of model for what we do, we don't have a lot of history, I don't think, in the U.S. of general strikes. I might be wrong. But I don't believe in violence in general, you know, especially in our society. I mean, you know, like, this goes back to the militia thing, Sam. They have a lot of guns, but fuck, the military has tanks and nuclear weapons. Like,
I agree.
So
the military is also constrained by norms.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the thing.
But they're well aware of the lack of norms that's going on right now. I mean, I do have some faith in them, in our military.
I mean, maybe we can end on this. We're all worried about creeping, whatever you want to call it, the slow coup. I don't know if it's a slide or a creep or a run. I don't even know, because, you know, speed is relative. Like,
subacute.
Huh?
Subacute.
What does that mean?
It's not chronic. It's not acute.
Oh, subacute.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're all worried about it. We none of us know exactly. You can probably only ever know what that point of irreversibility is from a historical perspective, like looking back.
Right, after the fact.
After the fact. And so if that's the case, we have to be ready to move beyond it's not normal. I mean, we have to move beyond normal resistance. If normal resistance is through the political mechanisms, I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, I'm gonna put it on a podcast. This is the most extreme, by extreme I mean rejecting normal politics that I've ever been.
Well, this is where we are. Yeah. There was a journalist yesterday that posted something, sort of this long list of principles that he's starting from, and it included Trump is a normal president except for the tweets.
No.
And thank you. His responses blew up, obviously, and people are like, not normal, not normal, not normal, not normal. And that's where we are. There's still people who are like trying to believe it's normal. They're frogs in comfortable in the water.
Well,
so,
what's the name of Palpatine in the Star Wars? He becomes Darth Sidious, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's the Sidious Horizon. It's the Sidious Horizon. When we pass the Sidious Horizon, we can no longer pretend that the Galactic Congress is going to save us from
any
real power.
Yeah.
And E.T. is still in that fucking corner making fun of us. If you ever
for
see that in E.T. in whichever Star Wars prequel that is, when they're doing the Galactic Congress, E.T. is in a corner.
Seriously?
Yeah, there's like Wookiees, it's like the different races. There's E.T.'s in one corner. It's this great Easter egg. You didn't know that? It's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't.
We've got to end on that, okay?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Shitty movies, too, by the way.
True.
We can have a whole podcast.
Shitty movie, but maybe a good mirror for our times.
Indeed. Yeah. Well stated.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Lefroy.
Thanks for having me. It's fun.
And thank you, Single Cut.
Yep.
We're out of here.
Good night,
everybody. Wow.
I've been everywhere.